Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, welcome into the Nick Bob Podcast, brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. If you've been thinking about some new windows, a new front door, now is the time to make it happen. Couple of different ways, couple of different directions you can go. You can either schedule a free in-home consultation, and during this in-home consultation, you're going to get a Pella expert out there, going to get a thorough understanding of everything you want, your project, your budget, and they're going to get a game plan together that works for you, and they got window and door solutions to literally any home, or head out to their showroom. Love the showroom, man. You get a great feel for all the different makes and models of the windows and the doors that they have for you. So that was the time. Give them a call. 402-493-1350. That's 493-1350, or check Pella out on the web at PellaOmaha.com. We have a fantastic podcast for you today. I figured with everything that was going on with the coronavirus and how it really spearheaded and hit the basketball world hard, and in particular, it's March. This is when people would be getting ready for the NCAA tournament to start, and with that's canceled, I'm like, you know what? What does a player think? And I was like, I gotta holler at my boy Mitch Ballack. And so I'd set this up. And I drove to Omaha on Monday and sat down face to face with Mitch and got his perspective on everything. You know, what last week in New York City was like to play in a game that got canceled at halftime, how frustrating it is to be right there, could have been a 2 or a 3 or a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament, and all of a sudden just poof, it's gone. It's emotional. It's hard. Mitch was really, really interesting. And also I figured while I had Mitch – and had some time with him, wanted to kind of get his thoughts on the season and then a little bit on his recruitment and ultimately landing in Omaha. Keep in mind, this guy's from Eudora, Kansas. That's right in KU's backyard. He had an offer from Bill Self. Yeah, how did he say no to Kansas and ultimately come to Creighton? What was that whole process like? Just tons of really, really good stuff with Mitch Ballack. I think you guys are going to absolutely love it. So without further ado, here is my podcast conversation with the Creighton sharpshooter, Mitch. All right, well, Creighton sharpshooter Mitch Ballack is with me here. What is today? Is March 16th. Today is Monday. It's 1 o'clock. You should be like practicing, and you should know your NCAA tournament opponent. Like, that's what should be happening right now, Mitch. Is it? You and I were just talking. Is it sunk in yet? Like, is this? Does everything still feel like a dream to you?
I'd probably say it sank in, you know, this morning.
Okay.
Honestly, when we were in New York, no, it felt like a movie. You know, we were in the Garden. They canceled the game at halftime, and it was like, now my first thought was, I'm gonna find my family. I'm gonna find my people. Spend as much time in New York with my people as I could. So I didn't really process it. But now, like, waking up, I'm in Omaha. Like, I went to Target yesterday to get some food. You know, like, nothing's going on.
Yes,
and it kind of sank in this morning when I woke up.
Let's go back to last week, because Wednesday dominoes started to fall. Right, like there was the Ivy League canceled their tournament, and then there was the announcement NCAA tournament's on, but no fans. You're like, okay, that's gonna be weird. And then conference tournament's on, no fans. Then all of a sudden, the Rudy Gobert thing happens, and he tests positive for coronavirus. Like, what, as you're watching all that stuff, what was going through your head? Were you like, I want to play. We all want to play this conference tournament. Like, what was, from a player's perspective, what was that like?
Honestly, we went to the game the night before, the Wednesday playing game, to see who we were playing, Georgetown and St. John's, and there were fans. You know, it was a good atmosphere. It was cool, fun game.
Yeah, it was good. St. John's always packs it.
Right. So then we went, obviously St. John's won the game. We all met in the film room at 9:30 for film to go over St. John's game plan, you know. And obviously Max said, I think right before we started film, the Gobert thing came out. And So Mac's like, we don't know what's going to happen. Let's just prepare. And from a player's perspective, you want to play, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, and also from a player's perspective, we're not educated on the
And nor should you. It's not your necessarily your job.
I mean, people,
like,
people aren't even people who know what's going on.
It's your job to know what LJ Figueroa is going to do.
Right.
Not what the coronavirus is going to do, you know?
I got to know what they're doing. I mean, their motion offense, how to stop it, you know, and what we're doing on offense, obviously, with the pieces that we have. And we were just thinking about – or Mac, when we went to bed that night, because we had to give up our phones.
Sure.
Like,
That's right. That's
Johnny
a rule.
Johnny and everybody's like, well – because I saw Mac, I came back from the city.
Yeah, we ran into each other right on the – yeah, right.
Yeah, right then. I came back and walk in and curfew, you know, and I'm talking to Mac, and Johnny's down there. He's like, Mac, do we take their phones? Like, how do we update them? Like, what do we tell? So manager came in, gave him my phone, and as of that time when I went to bed, fans were still coming.
Yeah.
Our game was still on and everything. So then we wake up in the morning and no fans, but the game was still on. So we were like, all right, let's do it. It's going to be weird. You know, everybody was seeing the tweets and everything.
But it's hard. I don't know if you're like me. Like, the process, you're pretty relaxed before a game and all that stuff. But, like, the process to get ready to play starts hours before tip. So you need to kind of get in, not like game face mode, but, like, you got to begin. Was that hard on Thursday where it's like you're probably going through, you're getting your body ready to go, and you're like, at any moment, there was this feeling in the arena, like, at any moment they could come out and be like, this is over. You know what I mean? This is not happening.
Yeah. Like you said, honestly, I didn't have problems with it.
Yeah, you'd be the one guy that wouldn't have any issues
with that. I just – honestly, I could show up 10 minutes before the game, get a couple layups in, and
you're good
ready
to go,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, my attention and focus comes from, like, I have a unique focus and attention to different things. Like,
yes.
Like, when I'm locked in, I'm, like, communicating with fans and, like, messing around.
It's weird, yeah. And I can see how that'd be
It just, like, keeps me free, you know? Just because, like, when you focus too much and you overthink, then I start to overthink and I self-sabotage myself before a game.
Yep.
So then I just have an approach to where I'm just like, whatever happens, happens. But once the ball goes in the air, then I'm locked in.
I didn't think about that. I should have crossed that question.
Like, no, that's good, though.
Mitch, you're the one guy. Because there are other people, though, need to, like, get themselves in that frame of mind.
For sure. And when Marcus was sitting right next to me. I go through my little routine. I do have my routine.
Yeah,
I go through
my
routine pregame, and Marcus is sitting there. I remember he said something about my hair and the light because it was all slicked over, and he said it was nice, and he took a little picture of it, and I was like yo you got my girlfriend's number, send that to her. So this is like 40 minutes before the game, and I was like Marcus, I appreciate you, man. You keep me loose.
You're always looking out.
He's like, I'm just trying to do something,
assist.
You know,
assist before the game.
He's assisting me off the court, man. He's always thinking about assists, man.
So what was the first half like of that game for like, what was it normal? Once the ball was tipped, did it feel just like any other game?
I thought it did.
That's sort of
personally. And even with the, I don't know, there's probably less than 500 people in the building or whatever they had, whatever the numbers were. I kind of thought it was a cool atmosphere.
So did I.
Like, I thought you were going to be able to hear the ball squeaking.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, we were still blowing coverage. Our defense was terrible in the first half. We messed up switches. We were, I don't know, their motion was getting to us.
Sure, and back cuts and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
they were just getting us. And but the crowd, like, and then when Jet came in the game and he did his thing and got a couple, I mean, he was in the gaps defensively, and we got some stops, and then he hit some shots, and then the crowd was into it.
Yes.
And now I hit a three, and I'm like into the emotions of the game, like throwing some threes out. I'm like, this is fun, man. Like, I didn't really obviously it's not as loud as 15,000.
Of course.
Like, it's never going to be. But I thought it was going to be dead quiet.
So did I.
And it was fun. I thought it was cool.
I didn't think it was as weird as it would have.
No.
You thought. Like, I conjured up. Like, I thought it was going to be like, you hear all the shoe squeaks.
Yeah.
You could hear everything everybody was saying. It wasn't really like that. I don't know if it was the band that helped.
Yeah, the band definitely helped. The band
but,
and the cheerleaders definitely helped. And just like, I wouldn't do that every game. Like,
no.
Obviously, I could do that a couple games a year just because, like, it's a
right.
little different, change speed. But definitely don't want the fans. But it was cool.
Right.
It wasn't like what I expected.
So, okay, game gets canceled. What happened? You guys, you in the locker room, and what, take us behind the scenes.
Yeah. I was the last one in, and Mac came out in front of me. Like, when we were leaving the court, we were going in the locker room, and I remember we were going through the tunnel, and Butch comes out and puts his arm around Mac and was whispering to him, and I'm like, I didn't really think much of it, you know. And then we all go into the locker room. Usually Matt comes in and talks to us right away when he comes in off the court and whatever. So there's a little bit of time. And then Butch probably put it in his ear, like, hey, there's a possibility this is going to be canceled. So then Matt comes in, and we were game planning, you know, second half. Like, what we could do, what we were not doing in the first half. We need to do this. We need to do that. And then Mac leaves, and he's sitting on the bench, like, right outside the locker room. And so then he comes back in, and we were talking about it. Like, we were talking about, yo, like, we need to do this. We need to do that. You know how it is. Yeah, you know how locker rooms are. And then Matt comes in and is like, all right, they just canceled the game. And then he was like, do you guys want to fly out right now? Do you guys want to wait till tonight? And it just, like, escalated so quick. And everybody had all these emotions. I mean, I was like, let me take my shoes off.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, some people were shook. And
yeah, were you scared? Like, I mean, because it's hard to kind of figure out what.
Honestly, I wasn't. I don't know. I always think, like, these things are always going to come over and just blow over.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't scared. I was more of like, wow, this is crazy. Like. Like, it's kind of surprising and shocking. So we were in there, and then Mac asked us, it's like, hey, do you guys want to stay for a little bit? And I was like, personally, I have family here. For the people that don't have family, I'm sure they want to go home. But then Kelvin had family, and Jordan had family, and Marcus had family. So he's like, how about this? We leave the hotel at 7, give you guys some time, go hang out with your families, figure all that out. So I was like, cool.
Perfect.
So, yeah, so I just went out with my family, and I actually went to the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
So I'm at the 9/11 memorial, and obviously didn't have my phone on for 2 hours. And then phone starts FaceTiming, and someone called me. And then I looked at my phone, and I see the NCAA tournament's canceled. I see in our group message, our team group message, they sent it in, and everything was canceled. And I was like, then I started to worry. And then I was like, crap, I need to get out of the city.
Okay, because I was going to – let's talk about that. NCAA tournament's canceled. Was your first emotion – and thoughts went to, like, worry, like, oh, my God, is this really – did it go to life or did it go to basketball? You know, were you like, God damn, I want to play in the tournament, all that stuff? Like, where did – what went through your head then?
It definitely went to life.
Okay.
Honestly, I was just – at that moment, I was thinking, I got to get out of here. My family has to get out of here. Like, all these people I'm currently with at this place, like, we got
to – Yeah, we got to wheels up to Omaha.
Let's get out of here. Yeah. Like, so they, but then at that time – Jet called me and was like, hey, my dad and I are flying back. Like, we got some room on the plane. You want to get in with me? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. He lives 40 minutes from me. We flew to Topeka. It was perfect. But then, obviously, as stuff starts to sink in and you're like, well, I'm not going to die right now, you know, and I don't know what's going on. As that started to sink in, I started thinking about just, honestly, the seniors, because it's like, I'm a junior, selfishly. I have another year. Like, this isn't the end for me. I don't have to figure out a job. I don't have to figure out what I'm doing next year. I don't have to figure out employment or any of that. And I was thinking of Jordan and Kelvin and just the seniors nationwide. And,
right.
And in those situations, like, I mean, that was their last chance, you know?
Brutal.
Especially, like, for Kelvin, like, transferring here and Jordan being here for 4 years, like, putting in the time. And just for it coming to an end, like, those guys is who you really – feel for.
Right.
Because, like, us, I mean, I'm going to be back next year. We're going to have this conversation. Hopefully not this conversation, but we're going to have more conversations in the future. And it just doesn't matter as much. I mean, obviously, it sucks. But then you start thinking about everything. I mean, you start thinking about Omaha. I thought we were on the plane. We started thinking about Omaha a lot. I mean, Omaha lost the College World Series. Yep. They lost the first rounds of the tournament. They lost maybe the swim trials. Mm-hmm. They lost. And just, like, all that revenue for the city. And all those small businesses that really make it during those 2 months, it's just like you start thinking about, it's devastating. It's crazy. It's just that was more life. And then I thought basketball was probably my last thought, honestly.
Like, okay, interesting.
People were texting me like, hey, sorry. Like, my phone blew up.
Yeah.
Hey, sorry for the end of the season. And I was like, honestly, I'm not worried about hoops right now. I'm just let's make sure everybody's good. Like, let's make sure my family gets home and everybody gets home to their families.
That's amazing you had that kind of perspective, because I think a lot of people, and maybe it helps that you work. I think my thought with thinking about your team, it's like, number one, most of the core groups coming back.
For sure.
Kelvin, Jordan, all those guys, you feel for them, but, like, most of the core groups coming back, that helps. So you feel like with this group, you're going to have an opportunity to do what you want to do. I think Marcus's injury made things, you know, I know players always like, no, we can continue to do our thing, but no one knows what maybe your ceiling was going to be.
Nobody knows.
So I think it maybe it that helps, like, you swallow this whole thing a little bit easier. Like, be like, okay, you know, we'll run it back with everybody coming back. Marcus is going to be healthy. Off we go.
Right. Yeah. Kind of like that. Yeah. I mean, that, and that was like my last thought. Like, we got to that point where we started thinking about next year, and Mac would send in some messages to us, like, kind of updating us of the situation. And obviously he talked about the seniors not having it, but then he talked about us coming back. He's
right.
like, we have this opportunity. Let's get, when we have the opportunity to get in the gym, you know, let's get in there, let's work, let's make something of it next year. He's more, he just did like an unfinished business at the end of it. He texted me personally and was like, it's like, fun year, man, fun memories. It was more of like remembering what we did this year and like how the feelings we felt, especially after the Seton Hall game.
Sure.
And everything. And then he's like, unfinished business, let's get to it next year.
Yeah.
So then it was like, all right, we got this group. We got
right.
We got some additions next year. We got some new pieces. Let's put it together and let's go do it next year.
I want to turn the page a little bit. And I want to talk about this season a little bit and kind of also talk about you. I want to start with you, because I don't think I've ever – you and I have had little conversations like this, but you're probably my favorite recruit Creighton's ever gotten because of what it symbolizes of, like, you're in the backyard of Kansas. And Bill Self and Rock Chalk Jayhawk wanted you. You said no to that and came here. Like, Mitch, I'm telling you, that is yeah. – Creighton didn't win recruiting battles like that, you know? So, like, what – how hard was it to – like, did you dream about playing for Kansas?
Yeah.
Hard then to say no?
It was the hardest decision of my life, probably, yeah. Just because, like you said, I'm 6 miles from Lawrence. It's a 10-minute drive to KU. I worked out there. I got to know those guys.
Right.
I had relationships with those guys. I was at all the games. Honestly, I almost committed like 3 or 4 different times.
Yeah, I don't know how you didn't. I've been to a game. I played there, man. It's like, dude.
I mean, you get chills when they're doing the introduction. They're showing their video, and man. They keep adding to it. So I saw it as an eighth grader. I saw it as a freshman. I saw it as a sophomore. I saw it as a junior. And the video just kept adding pieces to it. But then it always ends with Mario.
Right.
Hitting that shot, and the place goes
going nuts.
And they break sound records. Like, they're at, I remember it was at like 118 decibels one time, and I'm like, I'm looking at the people I'm with, like, this is crazy.
Yeah,
like, this is nuts. And then, honestly, Coach LJ, my AU coach, I had a lot of conversations with him, and he did a lot for me, just kind of making me understand, like, hey, you're looking at this. Obviously, you want this as a basketball at a basketball place. You're looking for these things on the court,
right.
You know. And then he really made me think, like, off the court and like relationships and like where the best place for me to succeed and like really grow as an individual on the court and off the court. That's what you're looking for.
Absolutely.
And, like, when I was 17 years old, I obviously wanted to play for the best team and the best atmosphere.
No doubt.
And no disrespect, KU's atmosphere is just different.
Yes.
You know, it's just. Until you experience it, you don't really understand what's going on in there. And the history, obviously, it's unmatched. And honestly, I just had to make a grown-up decision. I felt like this was the best place. And I was gonna take visits everywhere. I mean, Creighton was my first official visit. I went on a lot of unofficials to the Big 12 schools in Indiana and schools like that. And then I wanted to take my five. I planned on taking my five official visits.
Right.
But then my thing was, when I was on my recruiting visit here, I felt like Mac had been on me since I was 14.
I was going to say, I remember Mac telling me about you, like, way back in the day.
Yeah,
so he said, I got a guy here that shoots it like Ethan and Doug. And I said, really? Okay, let me see this guy.
And I was like, I was 14, and he got in on it. And everything he told me was, at the time, it was true. Everything since I've been here was true. He didn't.
Yeah.
He never lied to me. You can't promise anything.
Sure.
He didn't promise me I'm going to play 38 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't do that. He didn't say, even as a freshman, he said, you're playing behind two of the best guys in the league.
In
the country.
Yeah.
So I was like, I just want to be in a position to where I can grow, learn from those guys, and hopefully take the ropes and figure it out. And Mac was true in that.
Sure.
And then out of respect for the others, when I committed in the morning.
On the official?
Yeah, on my official visit.
Okay.
Mac and D-Rock, you know, they asked me, they're like, hey, what do you, like, we've been in it for 4 years. Like, where do you put us? Like, do you want us to keep recruiting? And I was like, honestly, I'm here. I'm good. I'm ready to go.
Oh, my God.
And it kind of shocked them. They were like, whoa. And then But then I told him, I was like, hey, can you just keep it under wraps? Don't tell anybody. Don't put it on Twitter or any of that.
Yeah.
I want to talk to all the other coaches and tell them I'm not – I don't want them to hear – I don't like people finding out via
you
Twitter.
You want to tell – that's – yes. Yeah. Right.
So I was like, give me a week. I'll contact all these coaches and I'll figure it out and then I'll put something out.
Right.
I'm coming here. And then I had the drive back and then it was Super Bowl Sunday. So I just made all these calls before the game and on my way back and I called all the coaches and was like, hey, I just took my official to Creighton. I'm going to Creighton. And obviously the KU one was a little difficult.
Sure.
About a 25-minute phone call.
I was going to say.
Wasn't good, but I figured it out and I made a good decision.
This is amazing, man. Did the style of play, how much did the style
probably like
impact things?
It was half of everything probably.
Okay, that's what I figured. Because you fit everything perfect. You
for
know?
Sure. And that's what I grew up Big 12 country.
Yeah.
You know, and I just watched Creighton.
Big Monday.
I mean I grew up watching that but then I just watched Creighton because I was a basketball fan and Creighton was good. They played the game the right way. They had Doug and Ethan and Grant and
Jahans and all those guys.
And then I just liked the way they played. And then obviously I watched the Nova game at Nova and they did 21 threes and Rocky went crazy and it was just an unbelievable atmosphere. So then I was like, well, I want to go see it, you know? So then Villanova came to play at Creighton.
When Doug was a senior?
Yeah. Doug's senior year. And then they beat him like 25 the first game, and then they beat him by like 20.
That's what people don't realize. They waxed him the second game, too.
And that was when – I mean, they beat him when they were like fourth or fifth in the country, and they just beat him by 20 at home. So then I kept watching, and then it never – I mean, they lost some players, but their style never wavered. So
right.
I was like, that's what I want to be a part of. That's how I like playing. They play loose. And my big thing was when I was on my visit, I talked to Marcus. My big thing was just having that relationship with Coach – on the court to where, like, if I see something, we can make adjustments. If he sees something, we change things.
Right.
And we just kind of put the ball in my hands, like not in my hands, but put the game in my hands.
He gives you guys a lot of freedom.
A lot of trust.
Trust, yes. Yeah.
And I was looking for that. So Marcus and Wop were telling, Marcus and Maurice, they were telling me, they were like, I mean, dude's a player coach.
Yeah.
Like, coach is a player coach. He'll listen to you. And I was like, I mean, that was the night before. And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
At that moment, I was like, I got it all. I was like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to commit. So I told my parents and we made it happen.
When I getting to do what I do with Fox, like you get to see a lot of behind the scenes stuff with different coaches. Not every coach is built like Coach McDermott. Like to what you're saying, like the trust of like allowing you guys to problem solve, allowing you to say, hey, coach, I think we should do this. Let's not do this. Not everybody's like that. Like, it's good that you recognize that and appreciate it.
Right. Yeah, because like you said, it doesn't happen everywhere.
No.
And even on my unofficials, I mean, I would talk to guys.
Right.
And he's like, nah. Like, some guys would shut that down.
He's got the clamps on us.
Yeah, some coaches go after – I mean, some coaches think they have all the answers and they want this and this and they want it done their way. But some coaches are open to, hey, you're playing the game, you know.
Right.
What do you think works?
Right.
And that's Mac. Mac. So I just like, that's what I want.
All right. Quick break here to talk about Pella Windows and Doors. You know, a great set of windows, great front door. It can really make a statement. Can totally change how your home looks, how it feels. Plus, it can make your home more energy efficient. And if you've been thinking about new windows or new front door, or you're looking at that energy bill and you're like, what the heck is happening here? You know, now's the time. A couple of different options you can go with. You can go out to the showroom. Was blown away with the showroom and everything that they had there. And, you know, it's one thing to look at a window in a catalog or look at a door in a catalog. It's another thing to actually go out there and open the window, close the window, open the door, shut the door, and really look at it. It gives you such a better understanding of what you're going to be installing into your home. And speaking of installing things in your home, you can get a free in-home consultation as well, where you're going to get an expert out at your house, and they're going to get a feel and an understanding of your project, your home, your wants, your needs, and they're going to get a game plan together that works for you, whether you prefer fiberglass, vinyl, wood. Pella's got it all, man. They can provide window and door solutions to literally any home. And I had no idea that this was the case. Like when Vince and everybody at Pella would tell me this, like the other thing that's great with Pella is the peace of mind that when you go down this path, that you're going to be working with Pella every step of the way. I had no idea that apparently when you go with some other window and door companies, all of a sudden there's these questions that pop up, like who's going to pre-finish it? Who's installing it? And they're like, no, you got to call that guy. No, you got to call that guy. And what? I had to do what now? All of a sudden I got like four or five different people that I'm dealing with. That sounds like a total disaster. It's the convenience and simplicity that you get with Pella and working with one company, not three or four. Just great people over there, man. Give them a call, 402-493-1350. That's 493-1350. Check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. Back to Mitch Ballack. What I want to talk about your jump shot. Like, what? Take me into your head. Do you have one prevailing thought? Is it like lift? Is it holding your follow through? Like, what is... Or maybe you want to have that, what you were saying at the start, you don't want to have a thought. You want to play absence of thought. Like, what's something with your jumper that you always think about?
My freshman, sophomore year, I would just shoot.
Okay.
I always had a thing I looked at. I would always try and find, like, when I was in high school, I talked to Del Curry a lot.
You okay?
And not a lot, but one weekend.
Like,
and
once.
Yeah. I talked to him. Well, I actually developed a relationship with this guy.
You were friends with Steph. I heard about that.
Yeah. His dad was, like, unbelievable guy. So then he'd give me pointers, you know, and then I saw him 2 weeks later in New York, and he came out and talked to me. He's like, I mean, it was just
that's
cool.
Crazy.
It was cool.
Yeah.
And he always told me, he's like, because we were playing horse, and no one gave him a number. Like, this dude shoots better than Steph.
Oh, I mean, Dell was.
Set shot. Like, I'm saying right now, like, this guy could shoot.
You would take Dell.
From 35. Set shots? Yes. I'm taking Dell. All day.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Steph, but. Sure. I mean, this dude, no one was giving him a letter at camp. Like, it was crazy. And then I finally gave him an H, and I was like.
There you go.
Yeah, I was like, I'm on board.
Yeah.
But he was telling me, like, look at the rim. There's three prongs. You know, pick the middle prong wherever you're at. Shoot for the middle. You
okay.
Know? So then if you miss to the left, you still have a chance to make it. If you miss to the right, it could still rattle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You still – but if you miss the middle prong on the rim, then you might make it left. You might make it right. You might hit it. And so then I started doing that when I was a freshman. And then I just kind of built that repetition and shooting a lot. And then this year – I started realizing, like, the more film I watched, I would assess my shots, and I'd be like, well, I'm missing when my feet are off balance or my feet aren't set. Like, I can make off-balance shots.
Yes, you can.
Like, I can go on the move, but if I don't get the lift and if my feet aren't good, then it's probably not going to go in. So then in warm-ups this year, I started telling myself, feet shoot. You know, like, if my feet are good, then my shot increases, the percentages increases. So then I just started saying feet shoot and before game, and I missed a couple, and then I'd notice I was off balance or my feet weren't right. So I just keep telling myself feet
amazing.
Shoot. And then the more you put that in your mind, the more you focus on your feet. And then all this is, I mean, I've been doing this in seventh grade, you know, I know the repetition. I have that in my head, but now it's just like the little things.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. Shoot. I tell the people all the time, like, you think about all the great shooters. There's a million different ways to release a shot. Release point, release all this stuff. But the one common denominator from you to Steph to Dell to Reggie to Kyle to whatever is feet.
For sure.
Like, there's no substitute for balance, squared up, footwork, all that stuff.
For sure.
And that's
what I started to figure out.
Yeah.
That's what I started to figure out. Like, I would watch these guys. I mean, if you want to see a perfect jumper, obviously you look at Klay Thompson because everything is just – picture perfect, like what everyone teaches, and his feet are always under him.
Yes.
When his feet are under him, I mean, it's a bucket. Like, you can't stop that.
Right.
So then when you get to shoot those fadeaways and when you're off balance, if you have that base already established, then when you get up in the air, you can twist and you can figure
that's
it out.
Right. That's right.
But if you never have feet, then you're off balance, you're throwing it. It turns into a throw.
Yeah,
and sometimes I would do that because
my feet
would
sometimes set. We have the little set, the pen into the corner where you – but before, as you're – like, it looks like an off-balance shot, but your feet are under you as you're on your way up. Then you can get the turn, and it's okay.
And then when you're up and you square your hips up in the air, then it's really – I mean, it's a tougher shot, but if you can figure it out, if you can figure your body out, it's really not that tough of a shot.
Do you feel like there's any – because you took some shots this year almost half court. Is there any shot that's out of your range? Like, any shot that you feel like, nah. I can't shoot this.
Yeah, there is. I mean, like, I'm not
like a full quarter.
like half quarters I don't shoot with my regular shot, you know.
But like if it's coming, like the shot against Xavier.
If it's coming out,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it was Kelvin. Kelvin got the rebound, kicked it out. You were probably closer to half court than the 3-point line, but it was inside out and the feet were under.
Yep. And I even got that little momentum step to where I could come into. If I'm going backwards, I'm not shooting that shot.
Right.
You're not making that. Or if or if like I catch it up high and then I have to bring it down. And but he, I mean, he threw a dart
threw it right into the pocket.
I mean, I was I thought, as a bucket.
I was like, he's gonna shoot this.
I was like, this is a bucket. This is a bucket. So those shots are you can those shots I'm good with.
Sure.
So a couple times I would pump if I hit one and then I get one, I'm a little deeper and I'm set. And I pump fake or whatever and then shoot it, those ones have the percentages go down.
Sure.
Because then I don't have that momentum. I don't have that rhythm. And the rhythm's broke. And now I'm shooting a it's essentially a set shot.
So yes.
The percentages drop on that one. But when I'm stepping in from anywhere on the other side of half court, I'm
you feel good.
I'm
feel
loaded. Good. I'm ready to shoot
That's
it.
That's the least surprising answer.
Good.
I had to ask it, but I was like, I knew what the answer probably was going to be. Before the season, when Davion sprains his ankle, didn't know necessarily what – you didn't know he was going to be gone for the year, but he ended up being gone for a year.
Right.
Jacob has the horrific thing happen with the compound fracture. When all those injuries are happening, did – like what were you thinking about how the season was going to go? Because that was basically, Mitch, probably going to be two starters at the time. Who knows how the rotation was going to play out. But players always think that you're, oh, we'll be fine to a certain extent. But, like, you had to have kind of thought, man, this is going to be a lot to cover up for here.
Yeah. This year, I wasn't as much thinking that, like, in the back of my mind, I wasn't like, oh, crap. Like, obviously, losing Jake, losing Davion, two crucial pieces to your team, it's going to make you think about things. It's going to make you think about how life's going to go on. But at that point, we had a depth that was really like that could really do some damage, you know, like so then at that moment I was like, well, we're just gonna have to play some more minutes. Like durability, like we're gonna play more minutes, you know, like three or four of us, well, all of us are gonna play more minutes and we have to pick up the load.
Yes.
And we've always had like our team this year has done an unbelievable job at like the next man up mentality.
Absolutely.
Like it's done an unbelievable job. And we didn't know what we were gonna get out of Kelvin. Obviously you watch, you see what he does, but the way he played into his role and did what he did. And the cool thing with the team that we had this year, we had Dame playing last year. We knew Dame was really good. Like we knew Dame was really good. Dame wasn't really good last year because the whole ankle deal and the surgery and trying to get him back to play, he couldn't really move.
No.
Like this guy couldn't move, couldn't guard, couldn't jump. Like his game is above the rim. Like that's how he plays. He rebound, energy guy, buckets around the rim, like that's how he plays. And we knew if we had a full Dame, like that adds to it. And we guarded Denzel every game or
every day of practice,
every day of preparation. So we're like, Denzel is a problem. Like, if we get Denzel, like, I mean, we had some pieces that we just didn't have the year before,
right?
And then we knew that we're going to come into the system. So now we're now Coach Mack's deal is, and with the rest of us is like, how do we fit these guys in to what we have now? Because obviously losing Jake, losing Davion, those are two big pieces. But now we got a healthier Marcus, because Marcus played his whole freshman year hurt. You know,
bad hip, broken hand.
Bad hip, broken hand. I mean, that was just everything was against us.
Yes.
So now we get him back healthy. We get Dame healthy. We get Denzel into the mix. We get an energetic. Who knows what you're going to get from Kelvin.
Right.
He's going to give it all of his.
Things are going to happen.
Things are going to happen.
Bodies are flying.
He's getting offensive rebounds.
Right.
He might get a couple fouls.
It's okay.
But it's like, hey, you did your thing. You earned those fouls, you know? So it's like, I was never like, we're done, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I never thought that because we had some pieces that the whole country hadn't seen and that we hadn't seen.
Right.
Besides when Dame first got here and when Denzel. Like, Dame, when he first got here, his growth and development from – I think he got here June, my first year, and then he sat out. I think that was when he came. And then his development from then until my sophomore year, which would also have been his sophomore year, I mean, it was like he made
huge
unbelievable strides. Yeah.
Right.
And Denzel doing what he did every day was like, I mean, we got some pieces here. Like,
yeah, because I think that, you know, it's concerning because you never want to lose talented guys, but like it didn't. The essence of who you guys were wasn't going to be altered. You still had shooters.
Yep.
You still could play fast.
Yep.
You know, you still all – so, like, it's different when – if you would have lost it, so now all of a sudden you got to be like, man, we might have to play 2-3 zone. Might have to walk the ball up the floor.
Right.
Now it's going to get harder if when that's the case. How hard was it, though, working in Denzel in the middle of the year? How hard was that?
It was decently hard. I would say it was easier than I expected.
Okay.
When you have a guy that comes from a place where he's averaging, I don't know, 18
plus. Yeah, 19.3, I think.
19 a game. I mean, obviously when you bring a guy that's a bucket into a system where we already have a couple buckets, and we have, now you're trying to figure out, hey, how does your role evolve and change to where we can grow as a unit? I remember Oklahoma at stretches he was good, at stretches he was bad.
Yes.
And at stretches in Arizona State, it was good and it was bad. And then even the first couple games in
conference play
in January, conference play, it was a little on and off. But then at times when we pulled the film and watched at times when he's making the extra pass or getting downhill, setting his feet, looking for somebody else, then we're like, dude, if we can get you to play like that for 30 whatever minutes you're playing a game, I mean, we could be unbelievable.
Right.
And he recognized that, and he was mature enough to understand, like, hey, if I do this, then sky's the limit. Plus, your efficiency goes up.
Yes.
You know, like, when you're forcing shots, your percentages go down. Right. You just look worse. But when the ball's moving and the ball's finding the open man and you're actually making the right basketball play, then the whole team looks better. You look better.
Right.
Your future is going to be better. Like, right. And Mac did an unbelievable job of really
getting him to see
that. And Huss implementing his offense to kind of isolate him in some areas, but then make him play in a team in some areas. I mean, they did.
Because you know what it is? There are certain teams you can play with that, like, if you give it up, you're probably not going to get it back.
No.
Like, he needed to learn to trust.
For sure.
That, hey, dude, sometimes just catch swing.
And you'll get it back.
And you're going to get it back.
The ball will find the open man.
Yes.
And especially in our system, the way we play, the ball is going to find you.
Right.
Like, if you play the game the right way, the game rewards you.
How did you become so unselfish as a player? Because a shooter like you could be like, man, I need to be gunning. But there are a lot of players that say, I don't care, I can score 30 points or 0 points, I don't care. Right. And you know, there's some guys who are like, you care.
You definitely
shut
care.
Up, man. You care you about care. You. You know exactly how many points
exactly
you're
those yeah. guys. I know
but,
those guys.
But you truthfully seem like you don't. Yeah. Where does that come from? To you? Like, was your parents high school coach, AAU coach?
Yeah, I mean, my parents did a good job.
Yeah.
I would honestly say all three of them did a good job. And I just came from, honestly, I would say at a young age, like, I had five older siblings. We'd play out. My parents made me a little concrete basketball court. We had a full court. And we'd play out there. And I had to figure out, I mean, I was smaller, you know, I was younger. Yeah. And I had to figure out how to get on the court, basically. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not going to come in and score 20 points because my brother's going to do that. You know? And like now, like,
yeah.
I don't need to come in and score 20 points because Tyshawn and Marcus are going to do that.
Right.
And maybe some games I will, just because that's the system we play in. And I'm talented enough and I'm skilled enough to shoot it to where, yeah, I might hit 7 threes and get going, you know.
Right.
So, but the teams that I've been a part of, I watched it and I grew up on a team that was like Creighton. From fourth grade to ninth grade, and then we played through 17s. It was like when we played like this, I mean, we were small, we had no five man,
right?
Like, we were in the final eight of the Under Armour, of the Under Armour deal. And then games where we shared it,
yeah.
We'd beat anybody in the country,
right?
And the games where we didn't, we were like, oh, I'm going to get mine, we lost because we weren't big, we weren't really like that gifted talent, like. From a talent standpoint, as the rest of people, because these people are 6'8", 6'9",
right?
Buff, can get to the rim, dunk on everybody, and we're like, oh, 6'3",
tiny, you know,
tiny, yeah. We got a 5'9" guard that's just like, it's just like we just got little things. So I guess my coaches, from a standpoint of just teaching me, like, hey, the best basketball is when we move the ball, like when the Spurs were doing it, and when the Golden State Warriors started doing it, and then like that wins, that really wins, and it's just more fun to play.
Absolutely.
No one likes playing for a team that, like, James Harden.
My turn, your turn.
Yeah, no one likes that.
No one likes that.
And as much as you think, like, hey, this is good, like, we can win like this, the winning stops somewhere along the line if the ball stops, you know?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, with the Warriors, like, obviously the addition of KD, you had all these guys that are doing this. But then at some point, you need a guy that can go get a bucket.
Yes. Yeah, there is an element. Like, at some point, Tyshawn needs
Tyshawn,
to just
go get a bucket.
Get
Marcus,
one.
Go get a bucket.
Yes.
Like, go do it.
Yes.
Like, go get
Denzel,
but,
ISO, drop.
Yeah.
You know?
But for the 40 minutes, you can still go get a bucket in the last 10 if we haven't got a good shot.
Absolutely.
But if you start forcing it at 20, now you're shooting bad twos and when you could have got a better shot.
Right.
So we were built on a platform that was like, we didn't, like, as good as Tyshawn and Marcus are, they weren't good enough to win games from start to finish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They're not.
Very few players are.
Very few players in the whole world can do that. And we were built on a foundation of trust, like Coach Mack.
Yep.
When I was 14 years old.
Right.
That trust and freedom and just unselfishness, we were built on that. And when we were playing like that for even 40 minutes, I mean, we were the best. Yeah. No one's beating us,
shots are falling. What was the – because I'm getting flagged down that you got to go do another interview here real quick, but I wanted to get – what was the final 9 minutes of the Seton Hall game like where you guys – you finished making 12 of your last 13 shots?
I didn't even know that.
I mean, it's – Mitch, that's hard to do 5-on-0. And you guys did it against Seton Hall with the Big East title on the line, just like – it seemed like that was just the, like the perfect storm of that group – and everything coming together.
Yeah. That was, I mean, I don't even know.
Just so you know, I've watched it like 10 times. I've watched that final 9 minutes. It is, it's incredible, man.
Honestly, I haven't even watched the game yet.
You should watch it. You should go home after this. And after Christian, so Christian gets switched on to Quincy McKnight, gets the and one.
Yep.
And then Mac had the trust to be, he was like, all right, we're going to go to the small lineup, going to bring in Denzel, switch five ways,
and I remember Denzel came in and hit that 17-footer, and then Dame hit a 17-footer.
You got a layup in transition.
And then a layup in transition. Yeah. I'll have to go back and watch
it. You got to go watch it, man.
I remember some of the play. I remember the turning point of that game. Like, I was always like, Seton Hall, you know, they have a good team. They're never out of the fight. So I was always thinking, I think we were up 8 or something, and Dame or Denzel hits a 17-footer to put us up 10.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's done.
Yes.
Over with. Like, when you're starting to hit those shots,
right,
you can't guard us.
What are you
going to
do?
Can't guard us.
Right.
Like, there's no possible way. And then Dame went to the rim, bodied him, finished, doing all that. Like now I was laughing on the court. Yeah. I was laughing. Mac was pissed. But it was just fun, man. Like, we didn't care. We were talking. Like, when we play like that, when we were playing loose, free,
right,
I mean, we are tough. Like,
it was
tough. And it was just thing of beauty, you know.
So you have no classes right now, but I'm gonna give you homework. You got to go home. If you want to watch the whole Seton Hall game, you can.
The last 9 minutes,
9:34 or so is where it all, I think Roden hits a three, then Christian gets an and one, then he gets subbed out, and then it's an avalanche. It is an avalanche.
No, I'll definitely do the homework assignment.
You need to do that. Everybody coming back next year, man, because I mean, this is a group that could be like preseason top 5, top 10.
Yeah, honestly, I haven't even talked to anybody.
Like, yeah. Well, everybody went home and self-quarantined
and it was
right
so
now, you know?
Fast.
Yeah, it
like,
was.
It was like I was with my family. Now I didn't even fly back with the guys. I flew back with Jet.
Yep.
And haven't seen them. Everybody went back. Everybody went home. So, I mean, obviously you text in the group message.
Right.
But we send like funny videos.
But Mitch, man, you guys, because you probably had the – this was the most magical Creighton basketball season in program history. And you got a chance to run it back.
We got a chance to run
to run it back completely.
Run it back, add some pieces.
Like, if that doesn't give you chills and that doesn't get you fired up, I don't know what will.
Dude, it's going to be – I mean, it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun.
It is. It's going to be fun.
At the end of the day, like we talked about, I mean, you can't lose sight of what really matters. And
right.
You can't – you got to keep the perspective to where – I mean, basketball is fun. You know, we got a group doing what we're doing, but – when you have those opportunities, you see people start to get, you know, a little big-headed, a little over the top. But you just kind of have to maintain. You have to stay level-headed. You gotta can't get too high, can't get too low, and you gotta figure it out. Because when you're doing that, then you keep that perspective. Then the games like Seton Hall, we're just having fun. Like those happen more.
That happens.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you don't get a big head because you were on the Nick Baugh podcast. That can happen to people.
Honestly, I've been glowing ever since I picked up this mic.
You got the request.
I saw Nick Baugh and I was like, yes, send me a Simon Cup. I didn't even have to see anything else.
Well, here's what we'll have to do. When everything calms down in the summer, look, I'll come back here. We'll catch up again in the summer. And
let's
then once the season gets rolling, man.
I'm in. Right. Let's do it.
All right, go do your other interview. Thanks, Mitch.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
You got it, brother. All right, my thanks to Pella Windows and Doors. If you're thinking about a new window or a new front door, now is the perfect time. Give Pella a call at 402-493-1350 or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. We will see you next time on the Nick Baugh Podcast. A Parkville Media Production.